Before we begin this evening, I would just like to make a quick announcement, and that is Baruch Hashem published a sefer last week in English. It's on the subject of Agadata, what's called Midrash Agada. Looks like this. And it basically takes various areas of Judaism and shows how the Agada illuminates them through the Agada itself and through the classic commentaries throughout the ages. If anyone's interested in obtaining a copy, I'll be bringing some in the next couple of weeks. And I hope you enjoy it. Low calorie and kosher Pesach.
It's for sale.
It is for sale. Okay, and from there to the business of the hour, Parshas Pinchas. Pinchas, of course, begins in the aftermath of the episode with Zimri and Cosby, which is recorded in the end of Parshas Balak. The end of Balak is known as Maisa Zimri, and the beginning of Pinchas is Ischar Pinchas. And the pasuk begins by introducing Pinchas, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron haKohen, Pinchas the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron the Kohen, Heshives Chamosi me'al bnei Yisrael. He returned my wrath from upon bnei Yisrael. Bekan Oes Kenasi b'Socham. He was jealous, zealous on my behalf. Velo Chilisi es bnei Yisrael b'Kinasi. And in that zealousness, I did not destroy bnei Yisrael. There was a plague that was raging through the people, and it stopped with Pinchas' act. Rashi comments on the opening words of Pasuk Yud Aleph. They're just names, but there's what to say. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Says Rashi, it's from the Medrash. What does this teach us? Lefi shehayu hashvatim mevazim oso. The other tribes were insulting Pinchas. They said, Haraisim ben Putizeh, have you seen this son of Puti? What is the meaning of that term? Shepitem avi'imo agolim navodos kochavim. Look at Pinchas. His mother's father, his maternal grandfather, a reference to Yisro, so he was fattening calves for Avodah Zorah. And now look at the grandson. V'harag nasi shebet mi Yisrael. So what begins with Yisro's acts, conveniently ignoring everything else that Yisro did in between, culminated with the Einikol. Look what he did. He killed Nasi mi Yisrael. Lefichach, to that end, bo hakosuv v'yichaso achar aharon. Therefore, the Torah seeks to redress things, and his miyachesim traces his lineage back to Aharon. So according to Rashi, these words, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, they're not merely information, mishpachology, but rather they are telling us something about Pinchas. He comes from stock. And as the Mizrahi points out, the greatest of the Mefarshi Rashi, why is Rashi commenting on the names like this? I mean, maybe we need to know who Pinchas is. Is that not inappropriate? Rather, says the Mizrahi, Rashi comments because we already know who Pinchas is. I mean, he has been introduced in exactly the same way in last week's Parsha. At the time, the scene of the crime, Maftir of Parshas Balak, Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. So everything I need to know about Pinchas' father and his grandfather, I've been told already not five psukim ago. To repeat it, therefore, is completely unnecessary. And therefore, Rashi responds by saying it must be coming to tell me something about Pinchas himself. And indeed, the Mizrahi adds, this is why, if you look in last week's Parsha, when it first says Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Rashi doesn't say anything. If we should ask, well, if it's so noteworthy and if it's so comment-worthy, how come he let the first opportunity go and only spoke about it the second time round? Mizrahi says that's exactly our point. It's specifically the repetition that leaves it open for drash. One didn't need to repeat it. It must be to teach us about his yichus, and hence Rashi's comment. Of course, all Mefarshim are wondering, what exactly is the contribution here? By saying that he's descended from Elazar, descended from Aaron, but at the end of the day, he, as true as it is, it's also true that he's descended from Yisro. So it seems to be a very selective argument. I mean, he happens to have two parents and two sets of grandparents. One of them is Yisro, whatever they wanted to make of that, and the other is Aaron. So those that were belittling or insulting Pinchas in terms of saying he's descended from Yisro, they knew that he's descended from Aaron. It didn't stop them to descend from Yisro. By the same token, once the Pasuk says that he's descended from Aaron, it remains true that he's descended from Yisro. So they're both true. It doesn't seem to be a point of argument. Should we ask at the end of the day, who is he descended from? Is he descended from Yisro or is he descended from Aaron? The answer is yes. He will always be descended from both. So how is there a back and forth here? Many Mefarshim in a very similar approach. We will take specifically the way it was presented by the Be'er Basodeh, one of the great Mefarshi Rashi of the Acharonim. Be'er Basodeh of Menachem Danun, a Talmud of the Maskil David, so he's one of his Rebbeim, was a great Mefarish of Rashi, and he carries on the tradition Be'er Basodeh. What Pinchas did is categorized in a very specific way by the Gemara, and there's only another one or two things that are like that. Zimri's crime, what's known in the parlance as Boel Aramis, he had these physical relations with this non-Jewish woman, aside from everything, the public way that it was done and all the overtones that were meant by it. What is the punishment, or what's the response to such a thing? The halacha is, or more correctly, the response is, halacha ve'ein morin kein. The halacha is that he should be killed, ve'ein morin kein, but will never say to do that. Another formula is kanoim pogim bo. Those that are zealous, they will take action and intervene. But the halacha is called halacha ve'ein morin kein. And it's a bit of a puzzling psak, because it seems to be neither here nor there. Generally speaking, we're not shy about ruling what the halacha is. So, as they say, mimon avshach, whichever way you look at it. If it's the halacha, so say it's the halacha. And if it's for some reason a merim kain, so then by what virtue are you calling it the halacha? So Be'er Basodeh says, if we come back to the second way of formulating the response here, kanoim pogim bo, those that are zealous, they take action. It's rare that you have a situation like this, that it's specifically left to the hands of those who are zealous. After all, if it needs to be done, what difference does it make if one is zealous or not? But rather, it's in this rarefied zone whereby action can only be taken by someone who's a kanoi, by someone who's zealous, and he can only take action if his zeal is 100% l'shem shamayim. That's what makes him a kanoi. It's much easier to act as a kanoi or do what a kanoi would do without actually being zealous on behalf of Hashem. Sometimes it's very easy for all sorts of other motivations to insinuate themselves into the act. So that is the crystallized formulation of what the halacha is here. Someone whose motivation is 100% l'shem shamayim, he can take action. Says Be'er Basodeh, I think now we'll appreciate why, even though it's a halacha, a morim kein. You can never tell a person to do it, because you can never look at that person who's asking and judge or assess with certainty that his motivation is 100% l'shem shamayim. He may assess that, and if he does, you can't stop him. But you can't make that assessment on his behalf. How can you know what's in someone else's heart? So it remains the halacha. And if he really feels he's l'shem shamayim, you're not going to stop him, but you can't tell him to do that. And with this in mind, we come to this unusual machlokus as to who Pinchas is descended from, when in reality he's descended from both sides. Physically, we know that his one grandfather was Aaron, the other grandfather was Yisro. Really, what the Shvatim are saying when they lay emphasis on his lineage, or his descent from Yisro, is they're looking to discern within his roots the nature of his motivation. As if to say, given this unique situation where it's got to be 100% the Shem Shamayim, well, if all of his grandparents and all of his both his parents were all tzaddikim and chassidim, then we could give him the benefit of the doubt that his motivation was l'shem shamayim. But look at his mother's side, and it only takes one side in order to corrupt the 100% of the motivation, and therefore they're not concerned by the fact that on his father's side he's descended from Aaron. It's enough that part of him comes from Yisro. That part they assumed is not l'shem shamayim. After all, look at the ignoble roots of Yisro, and that's a statement about the nature of his act. That's really what's behind the bizayon of the Shvatim. And to that end, therefore, the pasuk comes to say when it establishes him as Pinchas ben Elazar, ben Aaron HaKohen, what it means to say, it's not telling us news, we never knew who his grandfather was. Rather, the pasuk itself is signing on the fact that the entirety of his motivation here derived from his father's side, from Elazar and Aaron, and of course Aaron is famous as Oev Shalom for Rodev Shalom, and that is what is being emphasized and established here by mentioning again, by reiterating that he is the descended from Elazar, descended from Aaron. So that's the explanation of Rashi. And in fact, very interestingly, I mean, there is a Gemara, we say that in situations like this, halacha ve'ein morin kein. We'll never tell a person to do that. Well, actually, according to the Gemara, Pinchas was told to do it. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Peites, that Pinchas was alarmed. I mean, everyone was alarmed, but Pinchas saw what was happening with Zimri and Cosby. He came to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says, "Limadaton Rabbeinu, did you not teach us? Habo al Aramis, in a situation like this, kano impogimbo? Isn't anyone going to do something?" And Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, according to the Gemara, "Well, if you know it, then you do it." In the words of the Gemara, "Karyana de Igrisa, the one who reads the letters, he can carry out the instructions." Now, aside from whatever that means, it turns out that Pinchas was yes, Morin Cain. He was told to do it by Moshe. That's very interesting, because I thought we just said that this is a situation that you'll never tell someone to do it. Halacha ve'ein Morin Cain. But Moshe was Mora Pinchas, yes, Cain. And that is the question of the Ran. However, says the Be'er Basoda, once we understand why a Morin Cain, why will you never tell someone else to do it? Because you never know the pneumius of their motivation, the full extent or the depths of their purity of motivation. Well, that's most people. An exception to that is Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe knows exactly what's going on with Pinchas, and therefore we have the exception to the rule whereby Moshe could yes tell Pinchas to go and act on the based on this halacha, because Moshe knew that Pinchas's motivation was 100%. It's the one time where it was halacha and yes Morin Cain. So these are some comments with regards to the well-known section of Rashi at the beginning of Parshas Pinchas. From there, let's move a bit deeper into the Parsha. Towards the end of the Parsha, there is an entire section of Korbanos. Most of them are Musafim. Parshas Pinchas is the maftir for all of the Yomim Tovim, and for Rosh, it's the laning for Rosh Chodesh. All the Musafim are the end of Pinchas. And the Ramban raises a simple question. I mean, we're used to it, but it's worthwhile pausing and wondering. What are the Musafim doing in the end of Parshas Pinchas? Or more specifically, what are the Musafim doing in Sefer Bamidbar? Sefer Bamidbar is about, as its name suggests, the specific experiences of Bnei Yisrael as they're entering on the way to Eretz Yisrael. When it comes to korbanos, what's the appropriate location to, for the Torah to discuss them? There's an entire chumash, called chumash vayikra, known as Torah's Kohanim, which is devoted to all matters of korbanos. So it's very interesting to ponder why it is that this entire section of korbanos musafim is not to be found in Torah's Kohanim, in chumash vayikra, but rather towards the end of chumash bamidbar. And the Ramban answers, and I'm not sure if this is his chiddush, and I'm not sure if all agree, but Ramban explains that Musafim, the area of Korbanos known as Musafim for Shabbos and Yomim Tovim, etc., are only to be brought in Eretz Yisrael. That's quite a statement. Whereas the other Korbanos are brought on an ongoing basis, but Musafim is only in Eretz Yisrael. Perhaps one may suggest, although it's impossible to know for sure, the Musafim represent the higher level of Kedusha that comes as a result of that Chag. Perhaps that can only fully be accessed in Eretz Yisrael, which is the holiest of places. And therefore, says Ramban, Chumash Vayikra, which is Torah's Kohanim, it's devoted to matters of Kohanim, but specifically things that related to the Kohanim, certainly in the Midbar, not only, but also. Therefore, the Musafim, which do not apply in the Midbar, but only in Eretz Yisrael, are left until the end of Pinchas, when Bnei Yisrael are Erev, entering into Eretz Yisrael. That's when the time comes to talk about these Korbanos, which will soon be relevant, namely the Korbanos HaMusafim. And moreover, the Ramban explains, this will help us understand a rather troubling pasuk in Chumash Vayikra, namely in Parshas Acharemos. Parshas Acharemos, the first section, as we know, deals with Avodas Yom HaKippurim. It's the Kriyas HaTorah for Yom Kippur morning. And there's many, many different features and aspects of the Avodah, the Shnei Se'irim, and the Ketores, and Lifnai V'Lifnim, and many, many items. And it goes for a good 30 psukim or so. And the final pasuk of that perek, I believe perek Tetzayin, says, Vayas Aaron kechol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Aaron did everything Hashem commanded Moshe to tell him. And of course, a pasuk like that is rather troubling for us, because of course Aaron did everything that Hashem told Moshe to tell him. I mean, if that's news, then we're in trouble. What then is the meaning of the pasuk by emphasizing that Aaron did everything that Hashem told Moshe to tell him? Is that not obvious? Says Ramban, based on our analysis, it is not obvious. And the reason why is because among the korbanos that are mentioned within the Seder Avodas Yom HaKippurim there are musafim. All things being equal, we would have imagined that whereas the unique aspects of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim are applicable wherever Bnei Yisrael are. If they're in the Midbar, so they're in the Midbar. But the Musafim of Yom Kippur should be left, shouldn't have been offered until, at that time, until they come into Eretz Yisrael. To that end, the Torah tells us a chiddush. Musaf of Yom Kippur is different. The Korbanos of Yom Kippur all go together. And therefore, Vayas Aaron, Aaron unusually and atypically, everything that Hashem told Moshe to tell him, namely including the Musafim, even though the Musaf of every other Yom Tov would not be brought in the Midbar. That is the explanation of the Ramban al Derech HaPshat. And so, if we survey the Korbanos and Parshas Pinchas, we've accounted for all of them. What are they doing here in the tail end of Chumash Bamidbar? Because they're Musafim, and Musaf only applies in Eretz Yisrael, and that's why they're here. Says Ramban, that will help us explain almost all of the korbanos that we find in this week's parsha. But there's one, or more correctly two, that will not be explained through this, not in a linear fashion, and they are the tmidim. Chamishi begins with the, and those who say the parshas hatamid every day, it's from Chamishi of Parshas Pinchas. Es korbani, lachmi, l'ishai. Two tmidim, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. Now, one doesn't get more regular than the korban tamid. We're saying that the korbanos that are mentioned in this week's parsha is because they only apply in Eretz Yisrael. We know for a fact that the korban tamid also was offered while we were in the midbar, and therefore the question remains, why is this korban mentioned in Chumash Bamidbar? The truth of the matter is, it's worse than that. Because not only should we be asking, why did the Torah delay the presentation of the tamid till now? It's actually presented them already. It's a lesser known or maybe lesser remembered presentation of the Korban Tomit, but it's actually to be found in Chumash Shemos, which is even before Vayikra, in Parshas Tetzaveh. Towards the end of Tetzaveh, the Torah it describes the Tmidim, morning and afternoon, Tomit Shashacha, Tomit Shebein Abayim, in Sukkim that are almost identical to what we know as the Parshas Tomid. It's in Shvi of Tetzaveh. Or in Mishishi of Tetzaveh. If you hear the Psukim, it's almost word for word. Tamid. Two kvasim, two sheep, every day. It's a keves echad, tasev avoker. It's a keves asheni, tasev benavayim, etc., etc. It's the entire Korban Tamid. Which means our question now is no longer why is the Torah only telling us about the Tamid in the end of Chumash Bamidbar. It's the Torah has already told us in the end of Shemos. Why is it repeating it in the end of Bamidbar? That's a troubling question. And the answer of the Rabban is in a very simple and straightforward manner, is that the Torah mentioned it again in order to put it together with all of the other regular cyclical korbanos, because these represent the regular korbanos. You have the Musafrim for Shabbos and Yom Tov, and you have the Tomid every day. Nothing else is regular. And therefore it brings it back as a prelude almost. There's no chidushim, it seems, in repeating it, but it's the launch of the Parsha of korbanos. That's Ramban's explanation. So, to summarize, for Ramban, the Musafim are here because they will only apply soon in Eretz Yisrael. The Talmud is here because the Talmud and the Musaf go together. We know about it already, we're told about it again. Now, the truth is, Rashi has also addressed this question, why the Parsha of Talmud is repeated in our Parsha. And Rashi says, and it's in Perek Kafchet, Pasuk Dalet. Says Rashi, "Hafu pi shekvar ne'ema beparshas va'ata tetzaveh, even though the Torah has already told us in Tetzaveh, v'zeh asher ta'aseh v'gomer," referring to the Talmud, we know about that already. Says Rashi, it needs to say it again. Why? Because he haisa azhar li yimei hamiluim. You can't learn the korbanos for all time from that section. That section was said within the context of Yimei HaMiluim. What are Yimei HaMiluim? The seven preparatory days before the Mishkan was set up. Well, those were very unusual korbanos. I mean, we know that all of the others only applied to the days of the Miluim. This is the last 7 days of Adar, before Vayiba Yom HaShmini, which is the first of Nisan. Vekan Tziva L'doros. But here, the Torah is telling you for all time, as a regular feature of the Avodas HaMishkan. So briefly, for Rashi, the Torah does need to repeat it. The first mentioning of the end of Shemos is only for the days of the Miluim. It's 7 days in history, and then we don't know anything else. You need to be told again for the rest of history, for daily. That's Rashi's approach. Says Ramban, I'm sorry to have to say, I find that impossible to accept. For a simple reason. Rashi is telling us that the first mentioning of the end of Shemos was only for that time, for those 7 days. However, if you look at the Psukim there in Tetzaveh, you will see in Pasuk Mem Beis of Perek Tes, it says, after having described the two Tmidim, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, Olas Tomid Ledoroseichem. This is an ongoing Ola Ledoroseichem for future generations. Says Ramban, How is it possible to say that that section was only applicable for those 7 days and not for later times, when the Pasuk itself says that it's for all time? That is not an easy question to answer. And that's why the Ramban prefers his approach, that in fact everything we need to know about the Talmud we know already from the end of Shemos. It's repeated again, and it is a repetition for purposes of Shlemus, of having it together with the Musafim. But of course, Rashi has spoken. Rashi says that it's only for the time, but the Pasuk says that it's for all generations. How can Rashi be reconciled? Well, the Ponim Yofos, Rav Pinchas Halevi Horowitz, explains that when Rashi says, or according to Rashi, when the Pasuk says in Shemos, that Talmud is l'doroseichem, Rashi will understand, it doesn't mean to say that it's for every day in future generations, but rather, it's for any miluim that will take place in future generations. After all, the context there is the miluim, the preparatory days, and every Beis HaMikdash had miluim of sorts. And therefore, the question is, what about future miluim? Will they also have this? The answer is yes. Olas Talmud Adorosechem. Not only for these preparatory days, but for all future preparatory days. That's what the Adorosechem of Shemos means. However, should we ask, but is it an ongoing korban once the Mishkan is running, once the Beis HaMikdash is running? We have no idea. The Pasuk hasn't spoken about that. Once you finish with the miluim, maybe nothing. That's why you need, says Rashi, this section in Parshas Pinchas to tell you that it's an ongoing mitzvah. So that's the Ponim Yofos. A fascinating approach to this question is found in the Tshuvos of the Noda B'Yehuda. And he directs our attention, by way of preface, to a very interesting incident that's recounted in the Gemara in Maseches Megillah. On Daf Kaf Ches Amud Aleph. And there, the Gemara says, Sha'al Rabbi Akiva es Rabbi Nechunya HaGodol. Rabbi Akiva asked Rabbi Nechunya, Bama he'erachta yomim. Rabbi Nechunya was apparently very advanced in years, and Rabbi Akiva wanted to know why. How did you get to be so old? Now, there's two ways that question can be taken. And Rabbi Nechunya's attendants took it the wrong way. Meaning, it said facetiously, it sounds like, why are you still here? And they took exception to this, so much so, says the Gemara, Asa Gabzi, the attendants of Rabbi Nechunya came, the Kamachule, they started beating Rabbi Akiva. They felt this was an affront to the rabbi. Why are you so, why, how did you get to be so old? Why are you still alive? Solik Yosef Aresha de Dikla, Rabbi Akiva had no choice to evade them, he ran up a tree. He perched himself in a palm tree. So that's not a situation that can really endure for that long. I mean, it's only so long till he has to get down, and there's Rebbe Nechunya's attendants waiting for him. And at this stage, Rebbe Akiva, from the branches of the palm tree, poses a question to Rebbe Nechunya, just to establish himself as a legitimate Torah personality, and not as a mechutzav. Amar lo Rebbe, I have a question. Im ne'emar keves, lama ne'emar echad. The pasuk says, it's the pasuk that we say regularly, es keves echad ta'aseh v'boker, one keves in the morning. Well, the question is, if it says keves, why does it have to say one? Just why not say keves b'boker, bekeves bein arbayim? That's an interesting question. He's basically asking for his security here. He'll be judged on the merit of this question. Amar hu, Rabbi Nechunya said to his attendants, back off. Tzuva mirabonon hu. He's a Talmud Chacham. He's one of us. Shavkuhu, leave him alone. Okay. So Rabbi Akiva was able to descend from the tree, having asked a good question. What's the answer? The answer is, Echad doesn't just mean one, because that's Rabbi Akiva's question. Keves means one. So what is the word echad? Echad means meyuchad shebe'edro. It has to be the best of the flock. Echad means the best, number one. That's the answer. Okay. And with that in mind, Rabbi Nechunya then answered Rabbi Akiva's question, which he saw is coming from a good place. How are you zochet to such a richos yomim? So Rabbi Nechunya says, here's my secret. Number one, amarlo miyomai lo kibalti matonos. I never receive gifts from anyone. in reference to the pasuk in Mishlei, Sone matonos yichye. I never was dependent on anyone. Number one. Number two, lo amadati al midosai. I was never strict about offenses committed towards me. I was always easygoing. I was forgiving. Vatron b'mamona yisi. I was easygoing with my money. These are great zechuyos. Aside from anything else, lahavdil ben kodesh lachol. I mean, this is just healthy living. A person who who doesn't let things get to him, and there will always be things. They'll always cut in front of you in the queue and shortchange you. And if you get head up about it every time, that itself can shorten your days. And so it was always easygoing, and that's to that he ascribes his longevity. But these are also zechuyos. If he is forgiving and easygoing with others, then min hashamayim, they're forgiving and easygoing with him. Those are his answers. So this is a very interesting exchange. Rabbi Kiva has been chased up a tree. He needs to establish himself as a Talmud Chacham. How does he do it? He asks the question, says the Noda Bihuda, he asks the question that anyone could ask, really. A child could ask this question. Sakeves Echad, if you know that one equals one, so then you don't need to be told one twice. So if it says Keves, why does it say Echad? How is that the trademark of a Talmud Chacham? Rabbi Nechunya was so impressed. And Rabbi Kiva was able to get down from the tree based on this question. What's so special about this question? However, says Noda Bihuda, if you look in Rashi, it's clear. Rashi quotes the pasuk from Parshas Pinchas, Esakeves Echad Ta'aseh Baboker. You see, the first time in the end of Shemos, it's Esakeves Ha'echad. Rabbi Kiva made a point of asking the question Esakeves Echad. Meaning, his question is in Parshas Pinchas. Says the Noda Bihuda, it seems to me that's what impressed Rabbi Nechunya so much. In other words, not only that he was asking the redundancy, but he chose to base his question on the section in the Torah that's for all generations, and not just for those 7 days of the Miluim. That's a subtle move. He says, I have a shaila in Parshas Pinchas. Why not in Parshas Tetzaveh? Because Pinchas is Ladoros. That's what impressed Rabbi Nechunya so much. So if we may say, Rabbi Akiva went out on a limb, but it paid off for him. But the final comment of the Noda Bihuda is his understanding of Rashi. And as we see, it involves Parshanut here. When we're in the world of Korbanos, we have to have a detailed understanding of the Psukim. You see, Rashi told us that the first mentioning in the end of Shemos was only for the Miluim. The second mentioning is for all generations. But the problem Ramban raised was, the first time round it says, L'derosa, L'derosechem, which is for all generations. Why do I need to be told again for all generations if I was told that the first time? It seems to me, says Noda Bihuda, that there's one aspect that needs to be reiterated for all generations. And that is the aspect of miyuchad shebe edro, that it has to be the choice of the flock, which is what Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Nechunya were talking about. In other words, we've seen on a number of occasions that whereas often there's a range of things that are acceptable in the halacha, but when you're beginning, it has to be perfect. When you're just starting out, when you're launching, when you're initiating, it's got to be 100%. And therefore, says Noda Bihuda, we were told in Shemos many things about these two daily korbanos, when they're brought and what's brought with them. Okay, and the pasuk says, L'doroseichem, that's for all generations. But it also said, Eshakeves Echad, which means it's got to be the choice. I may have thought that when it comes to future generations, when the section in Shemos says this is the recitation, it's the halachas of the korban are for all generations. But will it always need to be the choice of the flock? Perhaps that is only true for those opening days of the Yemei HaMiluim. And that is why the Torah needed to repeat the entire section of the Tamid for the benefit of this halacha, that even on an ongoing basis, on a daily basis, it will always need to be the choice of the flock. And as is often the case in the Torah, once it's for the benefit of one aspect of the parsha, the entire parsha is now reiterated. But that's the anchor of the repetition. don't think it's just for the start, for the starting days, those 7 days of the Miluim, but rather every single day it needs to be 100%. Meyuchad Shebe Edro. That's my understanding of Rashi, and says Nodi Bihuda, and this is the master stroke of his discussion here. What makes me even more convinced that this is true is have a look at Rashi. Rashi in Perek Kaf Ches, the comment that we quoted from Rashi, it already said in Shemos, but it needs to say it again for all generations, that's on Pasuk Dalet, commenting on the words Es HaKeves Echad. Says Rashi, even though we've been told about this, we need to be told about it again. Says Nodi Bihuda, I have a simple question. If Rashi's bothered by the repetition, if what bothers him is that we've been told about this already, well, when does the repetition begin? As soon as the parsha looks like it's talking about the Tamid, Rashi should already engage and already say, well, we know this already, why does the Torah say it again? I mean, the repetition really begins from Pasuk Aleph. And Pasuk Beis, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Tzavis Bnei Yisrael, Korbani Lachmi, Reach Nichochi. The whole section begins there, and it's already repetitive because I know the whole thing from Chumash Shemos. Why does Rashi save his alarm at the repetition until we're halfway through the parsha? It's Pasuk Dalet, and Rashi says, well, haven't we heard this already? Didn't we hear about this in Chumash Shemos? We did, but why is this only bothering you now? Says Nodi Bihuda, but that's what I've been saying. The reason why Rashi saves his comment until Pasuk Dalet, which and comments on the word Esakeves Echad, and that's when he speaks about why it was repeated, is because it was repeated for the benefit of Pasuk Dalet, which says Esakeves Echad, which tells us that it has to be the choice of the flock. And Nodi Bihuda says, I understand that Rashi is saying that it was in order to teach us that this halacha will always be true for Korban Tamid for all generations. So Rashi waited to raise the question until we were on location for what the answer is all about. It will always need to be the choice of the flock. So these are some high-octane parshanut discussions of the Acharonim, just to see the attention to detail. What did Rashi say? What does he mean? Where did he say it? What is he referring to? This is the way that the greats learnt Rashi. The influence of the two daily korbanos on our daily life, well, is to be found in the beginning of the fourth parak of Maseches Brachos, because according to one opinion in the Gemara, our three daily fillos correspond to the two tmidim. In the words of the Gemara, tfilos keneged tmidim tiknum. The rabbis instituted three daily tfilos, Shemona Esreis, Shacharis Mincha Maariv, modeled them and paralleled them to the avoda of the Tamid. Shacharis corresponds to the morning Tamid, Mincha corresponds to the afternoon Tamid, and Maariv corresponds to the what's called the Haktorah, the offering on the Mizbeach of all of the korbanos of the day, specifically the afternoon Tamid. That's one opinion, actually. The other opinion in the Gemara as to the source, the background to the three tfilos, is tfilos avos tiknum. They are the product of the institution of Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Avram instituted Shacharis, Yitzhak Mincha, and Yaakov Maariv. So these are the two classic approaches to understanding the background to our tfilos. And they are hundreds and hundreds of years apart. And it's difficult actually to find what's called the nafkimina between them. Halachically, does it make a difference whether they come from the avos or whether they come from the tmidim? At the end of the day, there's still the same number of brachas, and the halachas are all the same, seemingly. The Rambam famously, in this machlokas, quotes both opinions. With regards to tefillah, he quotes tefillahs keneged tmidim tikkunim, they correspond to the sacrificial service, but in Hilchos Malachim he also quotes, as he discusses how certain mitzvahs found their way into history, prehistory for us, he quotes the opinion of Tfilos Avos Tiknun, which is interesting because that seems to be illegal. It's a machlokas, and the Rambam brings both of them, but clearly the Rambam sees the Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov as the historical background, but the halachically binding background is the Anshik Neses HaGadolah Keneged Tmidim. What's interesting is, and this question was also asked to the Nodi Bihuda by Rabbi Yeshaya Berlin, if indeed the Shmona Esrei corresponds to the Korban Tamid, we may ask, why is there no mention of the Korban Tomid in the Shemona Esrei? And should we say, well, why should there be? To that we'll respond, well, because there always is. Every other tefillah, every other amida that corresponds to a Korban, we know about it. The others are Musafim, and we talk about it explicitly. Etc. We mention the Musaf. So if tefillahs correspond to the Tmidim, why not mention the Tmidim in the Shemona Esrei? It would seem to be exactly the same thing. So the Nedim Yehuda begins by saying, I would not presume to fathom why the Anshei Knesset HaGadola instituted the tefillah in the way that they did. However, not everyone is happy with an answer like that, and therefore the Nedim Yehuda proceeds to say, it could be the reason why there's no mention of the Tomid during our Shemona Esrei is because although tefillah as an obligation corresponds, Shacharis and Mincha and then Maariv corresponds to the Korbanos, but there is a concept of davening even in addition, saying Shemona Esrei in addition to those fixtures. There is a concept of tefillas nedava, a person may volunteer to daven again. Nowadays that's not recommended. We'd rather have a modest ambition of having proper kavanah for the tefillahs that are obligations. But back in the day, it was considered to be a worthy thing to daven tefillas nedava. Moreover, Rabbi Yochanan famously says in the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Kaf Aleph, "Ulevai sheyispalal adam kol hayom kulo." Halavai, a person should daven the whole day. Well, says Nodi Behuda, that would be impossible if the Tmidim were mentioned explicitly in the Shemona Esrei. Because whereas it's possible and even praiseworthy to daven more than once, but you can't bring a Korban Tomid more than once, and therefore, had the Korban Tomid been mentioned explicitly in Shacharis and Mincha, there would be no way, there'd be no room anymore to say that tefillah again. In order to release it from the minimum of two, and allow for the possibility of davening extra, therefore, says Nodi Behuda, there was no mention of the Korban Tomid in order to allow for these further tefillos. That's the answer of the Nodi Behuda. Ironically, the Korban Tomid is mentioned explicitly in the Amidah, just not in Shacharis or Mincha. The only time we will find an explicit mention of the Tomid in the davening is in Musaf. Because we say, V'sham na'aseh lefanecha as korban ha'shavaseinu, temidim kisidron u'musafim kilchosam. So ironically, it's only in Musaf we actually find an explicit reference to the Korban Tomid. And Rav Huttner in the Pachad Yitzchak, and his Sefer on Pesach, explains that this is the background to what is otherwise a bit of a puzzling Ashkenazi minhag. Not that there's only one, but as we know, during the course of Shul, so we say the Shir Shal Yom. When do we say the Shir Shal Yom? Minhag Ashkenaz is that Shir Shal Yom is said after Musaf. Now, potentially, that's a little misleading. If one didn't know better, one would think that the appropriate time, or as we reflect the time that the Shir Shayom was said, it was said in the Hamikdash, Hayomim Shabbos Kodesh, Shebo Hayalavim Omer Beis Hamikdash, Mizmor Shir Leyom HaShabbos. When did they say Mizmor Shir Leyom HaShabbos? Not after Musaf. That is the Shir that they would say after Shacharis. In fact, after Musaf, they would say something else that we don't even say. Parshas Hazinu, it's not so well known. Parshas Hazinu was split into six or seven, and was said after the Korban Musaf. Okay, we don't even go near that. But it's interesting that we say the Shir Shayom for Shacharis after Musaf. Minhag Sfarad, actually, is to say the Shir Shayom straight after Shacharis. And certain Ashkenazim who have a Sfarad sympathies also find themselves Zrizim Makdimim, they find themselves saying the Shir Shayom after Shacharis, but the Ashkenazi minhag is to say after Musaf. Now, the Balabatish answer could be that at the end of the day, because it's a Zecher LeMikdash, we often find that we're not so medactic in Zecher LeMikdash to make it correspond exactly to the details of how it was. That's a possibility. And in fact, a case in point is Pitamach HaTorah. Everyone says Pitta Makatoras at the end of Shul, even Sfardim. Now the Ketores, again, would we say that the Ketores was offered after Musaf? Ketores was not only offered, not after Musaf, it was actually offered before the morning Korban. It should be the first thing that's said. And some say Pitta Makatoras before Sukkot Zimra also. But for those that only say it once and they say it at the end of Musaf, there is no way that that's a reflection of the order of the Korbanos. It was offered first and it's said last. And that's how it goes. It's a Zeichel Adavar. Everyone's in shul, hopefully you haven't left yet, and it's a Zeichel Ladova. And it could be the same is true for the Ashkenazi minhag of Shir Shayom. However, Pachad Yitzchak says that it could be that the reason why we delay, what the background to delaying the Shir Shayom till after Musaf is because it corresponds to the Korban Tomid, and the Korban Tomid is never mentioned in Shacharis. It is mentioned in Musaf, and therefore, apropos of that reference to the Korban Tomid, that's when we say the Shir Shayom. So there's a great deal of thought invested here in terms of exactly why things are the way they are and when they are. I'd like to conclude, after most of this evening, which was a light parsha discussion, by referring to a section at the end of the parsha, which is the Korbanos of Sukkos. And again, we're the Musafim of Sukkos. They have many distinctive features, specifically the Purim, the cows that go in decreasing order from 13 down to 7. There's a lot of discussion about that. And every day also ends with a Chatas, with a Seir L'Chatas. This is Shvi'i. It's all of Shvi'i of Parshas Pinchas, and it's Maftir for all of Sukkos. The final Korban that's mentioned each day is the goat that's a chatas. Seir yizim echad lechatas. Interestingly, although the chatas is mentioned last, it is brought first. The halacha is that the chatas is brought first. For various reasons, it's always mentioned last in the Torah. That so says the Gemara in Maseches Vachim. Rashi quotes it in Parshas Tazria. In fact, this may also give us further insight into something that we say regularly in the Musaf. We say Shetaleinu v'Simcha la'Arzenu v'Shana selefanecha Korbanos chavaseinu Temidim kesidram. We hope to offer the korban Temidim kesidram u'Musafim kilchasam. The Temidim in their order and Musafim according to their halachas. Now that's very interesting because last I checked, we're quite keen on offering all of the korbanos in accordance with their halachas. It's an interesting thing to say about a certain type of korban. That one will do halachically. And what about the others? I should hope they're all halachic. You don't want to make a mistake in the Beis HaMikdash. So why is it that we only say Musafim kehilchasam? And a fascinating answer to this question is given by Rav Bezalel HaKohen of Vilna. He's quoted by his brother, Rav Shlomo HaKohen, in the Tshuvas Binyan Shlomo. And he says, the reason why we only say Musafim kehilchasam is because Temidim, the Korban Tomid, first, the Pasuk mentions the morning one, and then the afternoon one, and that's how we bring them. Temidim Kesidram. Musafim are not brought Kesidram. Musafim are not brought in accordance with the way that they're mentioned in the Torah, because they're always mentioned last, but the Halacha says they're brought first. And that's why we say that whereas Temidim are yes brought Kesidram in keeping with the order they've been mentioned in the Torah, but Musafim are not brought Kesidram, rather Kehilchasam, in accordance with the halacha as we've received it, that was mentioned last, actually comes first. So that's a gem from Rabbi Tzalel Lekohen of Vilna, something that we say regularly. What's interesting to note is how exactly it is that the Torah refers to these goats. By that we mean, if we have a look at the first day, which is in Perek Kaftes, Pasuk Tetzayin, day one. Usi'ir izim echad chatas. One goat, chatas. Okay. The same is true on the second day, which is mentioned in Pasuk Yutes. Usi'ir izim echad chatas. So far everything seems to be uniform. However, when it comes to the third day, and the chatas there is mentioned in Pasuk Kafbeis, it says, Usi'ir chatas echad. Si'ir. What's a si'ir? A goat. But the first 2 days, the Pasuk referred to it as si'ir izim. And now it's a si'ir. Okay, something's changed. Back to day 4, Pasuk Kaf Hei, back to Seir Izim. And then the rest of the days is Seir. So, it's the same animal. What is the difference between Seir and Seir Izim? And the Vilna Gaon explains. Classic comment. We know that the number of Purim that are offered in Musaf on Sukkot, they number 70, 13 down to 7 over those 7 days, they number 70, and they correspond to the 70 nations of the world. We actually offer a korban on behalf of the 70 nations of the world. You won't hear about it in the United Nations, but we used to do that. So, the 70 nations of the world, says the Gaon, can roughly be divided into two, because there are two nations that really represent the two segments of those 70. Namely, Esav and Yishmael, what we know as East and West. And important to note, Esav and Yishmael, although we have such experience with them and they're such significant nations, they're not of the 70 nations. The 70 nations were already set in the time of Avram, in the Dor HaPalaga, as the generation of the dispersion in the Migdal Bavel. That was before Yishmael and Esav were born. So Yishmael and Esav, they're not of the 70. They come afterwards, but they become honorary patrons of all 70. Zohar HaKadosh says that of the 70 nations, 35 of them accrue to and belong in the camp of Yishmael, and 35 to Esav. And moreover, says the Zohar, if you ever find the two terms Seir and Seir Izim, the difference between them is that when it just says Seir, it's a reference, it's an allusion to Esav. Seir Izim is a reference to Yishmael, an allusion to Yishmael. Therefore, says the Gaon, let's go back and consider which days the Chatas was referred to as a Seir and which Seir Izim. On days 1, 2, and 4, only on those 3 days, it was called Seir Izim specifically. Well, 13, 12, and 10 gives you 35. Those are the 35 that accrue to the Seir Izim represented by Yishmael. The others, days 3, 5, 6, and 7, those numbers, 11, and 9, 8, and 7, add all those up, they also come to 35, and they correspond to Seir, which is Esav. So this is an altogether different way of looking at things that al derech hapshat are impossible to fathom. After all the pshat discussions, there's yet more al derech haremes. And impossible not to mention, just for our final 2 moments, if we speak of the Gaon and the Ramazim here. Throughout the course of Sukkot, there are 70 parim. And then on Shmini Atzeres, there's just one. Par Echad, Ayel Echad. And Rashi tells us from the Medrash that the 70 parim on Sukkot correspond to the 70 nations of the world. And then the final one on Shmini Atzeres is just Am Yisrael, ourselves alone. In Parshas Vayera, we find an amazing gesture on the part of Avram. It's actually, to a degree, incomprehensible. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him he's going to destroy the people of Sodom, and Avram intercedes to daven for them, that they should be spared, even though they're of exceedingly low moral caliber, and they're not any nachas to anyone. He cares about them. He puts himself out for them. He introduces his prayer by saying to Hashem, "Al no yichal Hashem, don't be angry with me. Hine ho'al to daber el Hashem. I have a strong desire to speak of this before Hashem. V'anochi ofar v'efer. Even though I am yet ofar v'efer. What's ofar? Dust, efer, ashes. That's a complete self-negation of Avram. I'm nothing, but I still wish to speak on their behalf. V'anochi ofar v'efer." Says the Vilna Gaon, there's a remez here. Why is Avram davening for the people of Sodom? What's he got to do with them? Avram is the beginning of the Jewish people. The Jewish people ultimately, although primarily their achrayas is to themselves, their devotion is to themselves, the Jewish people are family with each other, but by extension and in a broader fashion, they feel a sense of responsibility and have the well-being of the entire global community at heart. Where do we see that? We see it in Sukkot. The 70 cows that are brought in Sukkot, they're not for the Jewish people, they're for the benefit of the nations of the world. And Avram is the beginning of the Jewish people. Says the Gaon, what did Avram say? I just have a strong desire to speak on behalf of Sodom. Why? V'anochi ofer ve'efer. What does ofer mean? Dust. And efer is ashes. Says the Gaon, look at the word ofer and look at the word efer. Ofer, ayin pei resh. Ayin par, 70 cows. Efer, aleph pei resh. One cow. So Avraham Avinu was saying that I speak on behalf of all nations as far as I can. I have everyone's well-being at heart, because that's what ayin par and aleph par is all about. Although at the end, the priority focus is for Bnei Yisrael, but not to forget the ayin par. And the greatest representation of this was his davening for the people of Sodom. So we go from the very pshat, embedded discussions of the Nodibi Yehuda, the repetitions of the Torah, locations of the sections, down to the words, and ultimately even down to the letters. Kedarko Shel Torah. We'll leave it over there for this evening.